podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Here's the agenda for the podcast. My goal is to keep it around 40 minutes and keep it chock full of content. First, I'll lead with a quick introduction. Then, we'll give you the equipment check, where we talk about some piece of a technology or other collateral running stuff. Each show will be wrapped around a featured segment, where we interview someone interesting from our running world. I'll follow that with a quick tip derived from my centuries of running experience. We'll wrap it up with some music of our guest choosing from the PodSafe Music Network. Some things we're not going to do. I'm going to try to avoid recording myself while running. All that heavy breathing is just a little creepy for me. And there'll be no extended monologuing. I'm going to try to keep to the facts. If you want the emotional content, you can visit my blog, the Runnerati blog, at www.runrunlive.com. Please leave me an audio comment at, and you better write this down, or better yet, program the number into your cell phone, 206-339-7804, or send me an email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. And thanks for listening. Let me know what you think. Plus, you know, the more comments you leave, the less you have to listen to me talk. So, are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run. Hey, good show today. We're going to have Gary Catterin for a quick interview, and I'm going to keep it brief so I can keep it under 40 minutes. I'll run a quick equipment check, and I will have Gary, and then we'll follow up with a tip, and we'll get you out the door. All right? 40 minutes. No muss, no fuss. See ya.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, so I talked about the headlamp. Another great piece of tech you got to get is this stuff called Aluminite, and there's probably other brands, but it's basically this fabric that has reflective, like hyper-reflective threads sewn into it. I have a hat, and I have a sweater for running in the winter, and this stuff, it doesn't reflect, it like glows, and you can see the cars when they're coming, like a quarter mile away when the headlights hit, you can see them just slam on the brakes and swerve, because they don't see a runner, they see this like, you know, formless apparition glowing by the side of the road, bouncing up and down, and it scares the pants off them. So, you know, you can have some fun with them. You can say, hey, you have seen my transcendent form. Build an altar to me and leave pepperoni and mushroom pizza, six-pack of stout, and a quart of Rocky Road every night, and I'll allow you to continue in this world. Or something like that. But, yeah, Aluminite stuff is great. Keep you from getting killed.
And now for our featured interview.
Gary, you and I met at the Cape Cod Marathon 3 years ago.
Yeah, quite by accident.
Quite by accident. And I was doing my goofy talk to everybody I meet thing that I do when I'm in races. And we were chatting along, and you were running along with me. And a couple of women there, too, if I remember correctly. We were chatting up a couple of girls, or women as the case may be. And we were cruising along. And I remember it was somewhere around like the 8 or 10 mile mark, and I said, "Hey, you know, guys, y'all are running like a 3:02 marathon right now. You know, you're running like a 7:05 pace. Was that really your intent when you started the day?" And of course, Gary, you know, you came back with some comments. So that's a great story. You remember that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, leading up to that point, well, for one thing, I should note that I think the reason we were having such a good time is because you chat up everybody in the race, and so do I, so that worked out great. But leading up to that, every mile I was looking at my watch and letting out some kind of a curse because I couldn't seem to slow myself down to a reasonable pace. And then you so rightly pointed out that I think we were on pace for about a 310, 315, and that's my first marathon. It was a little bit insane.
And you were, I asked you, and you said, oh, I'm targeting like a four-hour marathon.
Yeah, well, it was my first one. So yeah. I had started running 6 months earlier, and after a 20-some-year vacation from my younger days. And, you know, goal number one was, let's finish a marathon. I never did it in my younger days. And goal number two was, let's break four. And in my wildest dreams, I thought maybe 3.5 hours, and here we're on pace for about a 312.
Right, and that was a funny day for me too, because I had caught my death of poison ivy the week before, and so the doctor had given me steroids, but they weren't the good kind of steroids. They were the bad steroids that suppress your immune system or your adrenal system. So I crashed hard in that race. I think we both crashed hard, but I remember saying to you,
well, I remember very, very well what you said to me, because this is how I figured out who you were later. Because you told us the whole story of the dog giving you the poison ivy and the steroids and the big storm and losing the power at your house and all the rest. And then you said to me, well, geez, you know, you could run your 8-minute miles very even, get your 3:30. He says, or you can run your heart out, crash hard, struggle valiantly, come home as a wreck, and you still get your 3:30. And what's going to make a better story on Monday morning?
Right.
Exactly. And it wasn't until about a week later that I went on Cool Running and read this column from this guy who wrote this story about the marathon, and there we were, that whole story. And all of a sudden I figured out, hey, I better go back and look at my pictures. I think I know this guy.
And then I remember you sent me a picture. I remember because we came up on your wife at about the halfway point. I made the whole pack sort of spread out so she could get a good picture of you.
Oh, yeah.
I remember
you yelling, photo op, photo op.
But anyhow, I wanted to talk to you because since that time, this is like 3 years ago, and this is
amazing. Yeah, that was fall of 05, correct.
This is amazing. This is an amazing story because you're close to my age. You're no spring chicken either. And since then, you have run sub threes at Buffalo and Boston, right?
Yeah, this spring, two of them 5 weeks apart.
Yep, and the thing I really love about your story is no one seems more surprised about your performance than you do.
Well, I think that's a pretty accurate statement. You don't really know what you're capable of, and you just have to kind of explore it. And there's a lot of things that contributed to what happened this spring, but a lot of it has to do with, you know, not only the training, not only whatever gifts you're endowed with by your maker, but, you know, talking to guys and kind of getting a perspective on not being afraid of trying out to see what your body can do. And that's really that was the breakthrough for me. I fell back into this sport. As I mentioned, I ran when I was back in high school, and you're right, I'm no spring chicken. I'm 45 now, and I fell right back into it. It felt great.
Which is the best age, because they give you another 10 minutes on the qualifier.
Oh, yeah.
Which 10 minutes is like a century.
Oh, yeah, it was a Christmas present, and I've got it in the bank when I need it, and boy, I'm going to appreciate it. But, you know, I fell right back in. It had been about 20-some years since I'd been running, and it just felt so comfortable to come back. And, you know, you look across various people, and there's various levels of ability and various levels of commitment, but I think the difference is that you don't let yourself hold yourself back. I had a couple of guys that I was training with this spring, and both of them said to me, you know, don't hold back. I was kind of debating, should I go for it in Boston? You know, could I possibly go sub three? I really didn't think it was possible at Boston, but everybody's encouraging me, don't hold back, don't be afraid of it. And you know what, if you let yourself go and you mentally tell yourself what you can do, your body surprises you sometimes, even at this ripe old age.
Yeah, and it's amazing that how much of it is mental and how much of it is you can't do it just because you don't think you can do it, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So I can remember talking to you at some point when you were making the transition from like a 315 marathoner to a 305. The light bulb started to go off going, hey, I can run this fast. And, Chris, what should I do? And I said, I was like, you know, I was... You've gone beyond me at this point, Gary. You need to find some professional help.
Well,
I can tell you how to run a 3:10 or a 3:20, but you want to be knocking off 6-minute miles. You're beyond what I can help you with.
Well, yeah, it's funny because you did. You tried to put me in touch with a couple of guys, real live coaches, and I did look into that. It didn't end up working out, but yeah, I remember your quote was, "It's a strange new world." You know, you're in a different world, and in a way, it's funny that you're right, because you know, we started by you laughing about how you talk everybody up in a race, and when I was out in Buffalo in May, I found that they didn't all want to talk each other up at that speed. It's a different world. But yeah, last fall at Bay State, that was really a turning point. 314s, I had a couple of 314s under my belt, and I turned to 303, which is an utter shock.
Right. And that's a fast course. Anybody
it is a fast course, yeah.
Yeah, if you want to qualify for bus and run Bay State in Lowell, because it's one of the fastest course I've ever run.
And I love that. I mean, I love the race. I love the course. I love the finish. The stadium finish is just way cool. And I ran into a guy at about the 10-mile mark there who I had run the first three quarters of Buffalo the year before. And he pulled up next to me, and we both just kind of took off. And the real turning point was at mile 22. He pulled up next to me. I had a couple strides on him at that point. He pulls up next to me, and I said to him, "said, you know, Ron, I'm just going to hang on. We're 22. I got four to go. It's that death march time, and I'm just going to hang on for dear life." And he turned to me and he says, "No, you're not. You're going to speed up."
Right.
And there was this silence in my head that I kind of looked at him and I had to compute this. You know, what are you talking about? You know, 22 in a marathon, you're going to speed up. And I thought for a second. I said, "You know what? I'm feeling good. Why not?"
Yep.
And we took off like, if you'll pardon me, we took off like bats out of hell.
Yep.
The
new course goes downhill there.
Yeah, I got a little cramp there at 25 and a half in the leg, but oh well, you know, and pulled in a 303. And it was just one of these things, you know, my wife is not expecting me to come around the corner for another 10 minutes.
Right.
She's scrambling to get in the stadium, and then afterwards, I was telling friends of mine, I said, you know, my goal was to hit 310. And here I went and hit this 303. You had no idea you can do this. You just don't know. And if you run it too logically and you just basically say, this is what I'm going to go for. I mean, the risk is, of course, you go out too fast, you destroy yourself, you fall apart, you're burning wreckage at the end. But, you know, well, you're going to live for another day, right?
Yeah, you walk it in.
But then you got a real problem because now you run a 303 and you're saying, oh, crap, if I'd run that 309, I could die happy.
Right. No, too close.
That's right. You're on a 303 and you're thinking, only three more minutes. Maybe I can do that. So my goal for this year, calendar year, was maybe by the fall I might have a shot at breaking three, but I really didn't expect to do it in Boston on the hills early in the season. But mentally, you know, I went over that course in my head. Mentally, I just mentally pictured myself going over those hills.
Yeah, it's just a great story because, you know, thinking back, running with you in Cape Cod, and then thinking, you know, at that point, if I had said, well, you should run bus, I probably did. I probably said, you should run Boston sometime. You probably would have said, oh, I'd never qualify, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The fact that I qualified a year later was even a shocker. That was a stretch. But it really has been, like you say, if anybody's more surprised than me, but, you know, I'm enjoying it, and as I say, you know, everybody's endowed with some kind of gifts. When I was a kid, I'll tell you what, I can't shoot a basketball, I can't hit a baseball, I'm 130 pounds, I was even lighter then, there's no way I could play football. The only thing I could do was run, so, all right, that's what God said do, so I guess that's what I'm going to do. And it's a great group of people, too. I just love the environment so much, getting back into it 20 years later. I love going to the races. Nice people, all health conscious, have fun. Of course they have fun, but, you know, it's a great group of people. And
yeah,
it's been about 3.25 years, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's a great community. That's part of what I really like, too, is there's nobody, you know, it's probably all the happy chemicals running around in their brain.
Doesn't hurt.
Keeps them happy. But, yeah, we ran a couple of races together since then. What are you working on now? So what are you going to do now that you've done this, you know?
Well, yeah, it was a heck of a spring. The whole Boston-Buffalo thing, doing two of them a couple weeks apart, kind of happened by accident last year because I had signed up for Buffalo the year before and then did a deferral for an injury, and I ended up saying last year, well, I might as well run it because I got a free entry. So this year, I felt pretty good after Boston. So it's kind of goofy to think that you'd do two of them in 5 weeks, but I did. So it was a big spring, and then I slacked off a bit, took a little bit of a breather in June, have a little bit of an issue with my foot that I'm getting healed up.
What's the issue?
A couple of small races lined up. I'm going to be doing the Stowe 8-miler this weekend up in Vermont, and a couple of local things. And I'm kind of weighing my options. I haven't decided what to do for the fall yet.
What'd you do to your foot?
Turns out, well, I'm getting old. Turns out I've got a little bit of arthritis in the big toe, which is causing a little bit of stress and some sesamoid irritation in the ball of the foot.
What do you do for that?
So, some good drugs.
Yeah.
And maybe some of those bad steroids if I have to, but I'm hoping I don't have to go there.
Yeah, those are a bummer. Don't ever take those.
The good thing is I know that, I know I didn't break anything, so it's just, I'm just trying to manage it, stretch it out, stick a couple insoles in the shoes and see what I can do to get them a little less irritated.
Yeah, so you're going to run up and go do the Stowe 8-miler. That's, I was talking to Mike last week, and that's his race, Mike St. Laurent, or as my Quebecois friends would say, Mike St. Laurent.
Ah oui, ah oui.
And his Loco shoes.
Well, I'm hoping to do a little bit less embarrassing of a move compared to the last time I ran up north, if you remember that story.
What was that story?
You remember when we ran the Fred Brown there a year and a half ago?
Yeah, I remember that.
One of my more embarrassing stories, but certainly a good one.
Oh, you came out of the parking lot at the start of the race and turned the wrong way?
I know a lot of people that have made wrong turns in a race, but I don't know of anybody else. And in the year and a half since I've done that and told that story, I don't know of anybody else who's actually gone the wrong way at the starting line.
Yeah, but, well, I think I've seen other people run the wrong way there. Because that's the way you came, a lot of times that's how you came into the Fun Spot parking lot.
You're just trying to make me feel better.
Yeah, I am.
But, yeah, so I'll be running Mike's race this weekend and going out to do some family visiting out in New York, run a couple of local races, and then in the fall, I'm debating because I don't have a great drive right now to worry about a PR in the marathon. I certainly had a couple of good ones in the spring, and so I may go back to Bay State just because it's local, it's fun, it's friendly, and it's so comfortable. Or I might do something interesting like go up to Mount Desert Island. I love that place. And
yeah,
there's a challenging course for you.
Yeah, I signed up for that, and something happened. I either got injured or something. I actually, because I know the race director, obviously. I know all the race directors, but I'll have to get him on the phone, too. But that's a beautiful race.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time up there, so to run that marathon would be kind of special. But really haven't decided. Like I say, it was a big spring. Boston was just an amazing experience. Crossing the line was emotional beyond belief, and then to go a month later and burn another couple of minutes off of that out in Buffalo, I got family out there, and I had to laugh because my uncle was telling me last year when I ran that race, he says, I thought they were going to put you in a box at the end of it. And he says, and this year you came through and you looked like you were a runner.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good compliment coming from him. So.
And what did you finish, like 34th or something? You were fairly high up there, right?
No, actually a little better. I actually finished 14th.
14th, so you're right up there. Right up there with another 10, 12 places you get the toaster oven.
I get to run with the Kenyans for the first 6 blocks, and then I figured I'd, be easy on them and let them go for the day. But
That's
out there, too.
Some good stories. Why do you run, Gary?
Well, now why do I run? Because I just love it. It's just turned around my attitude. Why did I get back into it? When I was a kid, I told you, it was the only talent I had. Enduring pain and going in a straight line.
Yeah.
But 20-some years later, even with walking and hiking and some cycling here and there, I just found that I was slowly losing that edge, that health edge, and you're sitting at a desk and you start to feel your legs feeling a little dead and all the rest. And I'll tell you one advice is never ever Google your symptoms, unless it's something like, okay, I got a little pain in my heel, okay, that's fine, but your legs start to tingle or something, like never ever Google your symptoms. It's just going to scare you. And it did. And I said, I got to do something. And I just remember back to my days running, and I talked to my boss at the time. I said, I need to do something. And to his credit, what a great supportive guy. He says, arrange your day. Take the time you need. We have to stay healthy as a group, all of us, and just get it done. So I started in March of 2005, and since then I've dropped 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Obviously, my fitness level has gone from pretty average to pretty far up there.
Yeah.
It's so good for your head. You know, I started up chatting before we started the recorded interview here. We were chatting about how it took us a month to link up because of my ridiculous work schedule. If you don't have that kind of outlet, it's a whole different world. So the running is fantastic physically. It's fantastic mentally. My family gets into it, even though they don't run. My older daughter runs a little bit, but they come to the races. They support me. We have a lot of fun. I mean, it's just a great time. And it also, you know, one other thing, too, is it really, you know, I think it sends a good message. People I work with, a couple of them have taken it up. Guys are out there riding the Pan Mass Challenge now. You're leading by example. You're setting a little bit of a pace.
Yep.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yep, I think you're right. And one of the other things I'm noticing nowadays, I'm an executive, and what I find is more and more, you know, the old stereotype used to be the fat guy in the three-piece suit with the cigar and the gold chain. More and more your executives, especially in high tech, are like Ironman triathletes because it just matches their personality types, you know. They're type A business guys, and they end up being type A athletic guys, too. So it's more and more you run into these guys, and they're just, you know, they're 1% body fat triathletes.
It's funny you mention that because we brought in a guy about 2-3 years ago to lead our company, and he is exactly that. He's the super athlete, triathlete, and he stood up on stage at our sales conference that year, and the joke was that all the other executives around him had blisters on their feet because they went out for their first run to try to impress him.
Yeah.
But it really does set a tone, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing for the whole country. It's a good thing for everybody.
Yep, that's true. So I was telling you, I'm training for, you don't know what I'm training for.
Yeah. No, I don't. You're working on something.
I'm training for the Vermont 50 in September.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yes, yes.
So I should have a pretty good aerobic base for the Bay State Marathon if you want to run that for fun.
Well, there you go.
So, I probably won't have a lot of speed, but I'll have a good aerobic base.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, because I think that's around like October 14th or 15th usually, sometime around then. I'll ask Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Mark, the race director.
Bay State's just a warm-up for you, then. The guy that I ran with in Bay State last fall who told me, no, you're going to speed up at mile 22, we ran Boston because, of course, his time was about the same as mine, and I wrote him afterwards, and I said, what's next? And he says, none of this short, fast stuff for me, and he's going to be doing that Vermont 50 with you.
Oh, no kidding. You'll have to hook me up with him.
Oh, absolutely.
This is new for me. You know, I've been doing marathons for about, you know, 10 years or so. And I'm learning new stuff, Gary. It's kind of cool. It's like I'm in a little learning mode of, you know, your body does different things when you're out for 4 or 5 hours, you know?
I can only imagine. We were talking about that the other day, that people say to me, gosh, you know, you run a marathon 3 hours. And I say, gosh, you run a marathon 5.5 hours. I'm not sure I want to be out there that long.
Right.
It's a whole different world.
Yeah.
And, it is different.
Yeah, I wrote a blog yesterday, a blog post where basically I said, you know, what's on the other side of the wall? Well, it turns out it's more wall. once you totally exhaust your carbohydrates, you just kind of have to deal with it, you know? So I'm learning a lot. It's kind of fun. It's nice to be learning something. So we'll see how that goes. So you got any favorite technology that you're playing with now?
You know, I'm kind of a Luddite when it comes to that. These guys running around with these little devices on their wrists that tell them everything, including their shoe size, if it varies over the course of the day. I am kind of an obsessive compulsive when it comes to measuring out courses and keeping track of my mileage and, you know, Google Earth and map packages and stuff like that. But I'm really not, really haven't gone down the GPS route or anything like that. I got a plain old stopwatch on my wrist and, you know, pretty simple. Not an iPod kind of guy. Here I am making a podcast. It's kind of funny. But I got to have my own beat in my head. I'm running down the road. I'm usually thinking about things and organizing thoughts. And, you know, it's good stuff, not like busy work thinking, but going down these bizarre scenarios. I'm running past a guy working in his front yard. What would I do if his arm came off in the table saw? You know, that kind of goofy stuff. So, you know, I'm kind of a Luddite in that respect. But I am known in my nascent running club as being the obsessive compulsive for course measurements and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember you were the guy who bummed us out on the Winnipesaukee relay by the day after the race, telling us that all our legs were short because you measured them by the satellite. Okay, so I didn't run 6:40s on that 11 mile. I ran
6:42 is not bad. Come on.
Yeah. Oh.
I got a little bit of a reputation for that, and in that respect, it's very refreshing to me when I run into people who appreciate that, and when you run into race directors who understand it and actually make their courses accurate, and that's kind of nice. Not that every race is fine, and everybody makes a great effort at it, but a little crazy. Well, that's another thing I've been working on lately is we've got a local running club here in the Marlboro-Hudson area, and I've been working on getting that more officially organized. We were just a casual group of people before, but for those good old insurance purposes, we figured we better become legal, get insured, and all the rest. So
yep.
That's a project I've been working on, and we are now legal and insured and all that stuff, and oh, by the way, in debt.
Yep. So now you're gonna have to be you're gonna have to start a road race.
Yeah. Well, we got a couple, but we've never charged anything for them.
Oh,
there goes line six.
Exactly.
I have about four phones in here. Now we've always done those kind of things as like fundraisers for the local food pantries and stuff like that. So maybe we'll get a few bucks out of them. But it's been a fun project. You know, give a little bit back and help kind of advance the sport in the area.
So what kind of shoes you're running in now? You must have changed your shoes from when you started to when you finished.
Not really. I run in both Asics and Mizunos, and your average middle of the roads, your 2100 series on the Asics, and your Wave Alchemies, and you know, none of the real fancy stuff. And you're gonna laugh at this one too. For all of the fancy articles and the this and the that and the shoe buyer's guides, my first pair of running shoes was I walked into the DSW, into the discount racks in the back, and I found a pair of running shoes and walked out for $30, and it happened to be a pair of Asics 2100s,
yep,
or 2090s,
yep,
or 2070s, or whatever they were at the time. And, 10 pairs later,
yep,
still running with them.
Yep.
So you find something that works, you just stick with it.
Yeah, that's what Mike and I were talking about, is that most people can get away with a mid-range pair of cushion shoes, and, you're not going to suffer from that.
Yeah, this thing with the toe is the first real challenge I've had in that respect, and I do need to look at something a little bit stiffer to keep some of the foot flex down.
Well,
but by and large, I'm pretty lucky in that if anything, my feet have strengthened up pretty dramatically since I started running. I don't have nearly the amount of arch issues and foot issues that I used to have, and by and large, that mid-range average run-of-the-mill shoe has been fine.
You got a good doctor for that? Good foot doctor for that?
Just met him last week. And
I go to these guys down in Waltham. They're called Pro Sports, and they do the Celtics. I've had really good luck with these guys.
Well, this guy seems pretty cool. His wife runs marathons, so he gets it. And the first thing he said to me was, "You don't have to stop running." And I figured, okay, you're an okay guy in my book.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because the first thing this other guy said to me was, "I know you're not going to stop running, so here's how you could stretch to get around it." And then the one time when the guy said, "You know what? I'm not going to operate on you, and you are going to stop running," I stopped running because I knew I could trust him. You know what I mean?
There you go.
And that's,
well, I remember the bit you wrote in your book. I loved your book, by the way. It made me laugh out loud. It made my wife laugh out loud, and she's not a runner, so that tells you something right there. But we'll give you a plug. Anybody who's listening to this, you haven't bought Chris's book, get a copy of it.
Well, it doesn't help, because the same three people who are listening to this are the same three people who bought my book.
But there you go. But I loved your bit about how, well, by the time you see your primary care physician, and then by the time they get you an appointment at the specialist, and by the time you go for the test, and by the time, you're either dead or you're healed.
Right.
And so I started having this issue with the sesamoids, and I just kind of slacked off throughout June. But, we are not capable of completely slacking off. I tried to take a week off, and I just couldn't do it.
Well, the other thing you got to do is get on the trails, get off the road. It's a lot easier on your body, and I think it strengthens your legs more too, having to deal with the softer surfaces and the uneven surfaces. So
it does. I don't have a lot of opportunity for that here, but in the end, I got to say, I called them up. They said 3 weeks. I said, they said, "Look, we'll call you when we've got a cancellation." They called me 2 hours later.
Yeah.
And
yep.
You get in there, and they say, "You know what? You didn't break anything. Here's what's going on. You're fine. Keep running." It's just a huge relief.
Yep.
You can go right back to it. It's been about a week since I saw them, and I feel like I'm getting the edge back. I was in really top shape for the marathon season, and just after a month of slacking off, you can feel the difference.
Well, you're not going to be young forever, so you got to learn to live with reduced performance. You can't keep getting 10 minutes faster every marathon.
Well, that's the funny thing is, I keep saying to myself, one of these is going to be the top of the game.
Yep.
I don't know where it is.
So what have you been doing? I mean, what kind of training have you been putting into that? Have you been doing a lot of track work or long interval stuff?
More of the long intervals and the increasing, my typical workouts are the increasing pace up to faster and faster as I go through the race. In the summertime, we do track workout. In fact, I'm heading out in about 15-20 for a track workout tonight. Our club does track workouts, and that's fantastic, but we don't tend to do it in the winter. But I have my mileage cranked up. I've been averaging about 200 a month up until June this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of it at faster and faster pace. I did mention being a little obsessive with the spreadsheets, and I started tracking my average training pace to get an idea of the quality of the training.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. It correlates very well with your race performance.
Yep. Go figure.
A couple of little charts tell you it work wonders.
And the thing that you're doing, which is in your training runs, finish all the last mile of all your training runs with a good hard effort, it's perfect for races, right? The worst thing to do is to go out hard and finish with a bad effort, right?
Yeah.
Because then
I typically start off like an old man, and I typically finish up killing myself. Well, not killing, enjoying it, loving it. In fact, Buffalo was funny because Buffalo was the first marathon. Then I had a kick at the end of a marathon, and I was doing this and thinking to myself, this is ludicrous.
Yeah.
That you go, you're 26.2, that .2 was sub-6-minute pace. And I said to myself, what in the Lord's name is going on here that you can do that feeling that good? Well, there was two guys in front of me, and one of them I knew was a master. That's why you did it, right?
Correct.
A little motivation. But the training was going really, really well. I did slow down because of the foot issue. But, want to get back to that level of mileage, and it really, really pays off with the progression racing. And then we do a lot of the interval work in the summer. And, of course, where I live here, it's all hills. You can't avoid it.
Yep. Hills are good.
So that's pretty much the size of that.
All right. Well, thank you for finally getting around in your busy life to schedule in a chat. I think the key lessons we learn here are, one is you never know what you can do until you try.
And, that's right.
And two is you're never too old to try.
And you're never too old to try, and you never know when's going to be your last shot to go real fast, so you might as well take a shot at it.
Yep.
And if I were going to throw in one other thought would just be to say that the thing I've learned now, 7 marathons, and the thing I've learned, and it took me 5 to learn this, is respect it, but don't fear it.
Yep.
Once I figure that out, all of this other stuff falls into place, and you can actually go out and race these things and have a good time and see what your body can do.
Yep. Well, good times.
All right.
I'll let you go. And
thank you.
Thanks for your time. And have
thank
a,
you.
Have a
good
have
luck on
great
this project
rest of the week. Thank you very much.
See all right. Gary. You too. Bye. Bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
Oh, great story, huh, Gary? Just take up running again. Get your sub-3-hour marathon. It's easy as that. Just go out and start running, and all of a sudden you can run sub-3 at Boston. Well, if it was that easy, my friends, all of us would do it. But it's a great story. You looking for a tip? Here's my tip for this week. Just go running. Get out there. Do it. Just go do it now. Doesn't matter what time of day it is. Go at lunch. Go in the morning. Go at night. Just get out there. And while you're at it, set a goal race. September's good. September is a good time. Lots of races everywhere. Set a goal, set a pace goal, set a time, and just do it. Put it in your calendar and do it. It'll force you to get out there. I am going to clearly be under my time limit for this podcast, which is pretty cool. And I've got a... Gary said that he wanted some folk music, some folk acoustic. That's his big deal. So I'm going to spin up a tune from the PodSafe Music Network. And I keep saying that. I don't know if you know what that is or not. That's a place where you can use artists, not well-known artists. They put their stuff out there, and you can use it as long as you give them credit. And so you can go there and look at it and download tunes as well. Some great stuff out there, some great artists that you would normally never hear anywhere else. And I'm going to spin a tune called West Coast Blues by Ben Fisher. It's a bit of a twang fest, but I think you'll enjoy it. we'll see you next, and I'll see if I can find myself a woman to interview. I'm starting to realize maybe I don't know any women. I don't know. It's a bad thing.
As I start off my new year running, I realize that y'all won't be coming to say, hey, watch it, don't look south. But I'm just like a fish with a hook in his mouth. And though I didn't want to leave, it's over now, so don't you grieve. And it's true that I never got to choose. And now I got the West Coast blues. I'll come to visit now and then, but I'll never live near you again. Not that I wanna do that, of course. But looking back's like beating a dead horse. Light a saddle and think of the past. For the last few weeks that went by so fast, I'm sitting here and I'm telling the tale. It's snowing outside, it's starting to hail.